Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive. We're going to be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. I'm wearing my Costas shirt. I was over Costas last week. We talked so much about the bridge going down, everything going on. I'm in the mood for crabs. I mean, I haven't had a crab in like 6 months, so I got to get over there, get some crabs. We're going to be at Fade Lee's. I'm not going to have crabs there because I'm my hands and I'm going to the game and the Diamondbacks are in this Friday. Then next Friday, we're back again, 2 to 5. Luke Jones joins me. We have the Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away while they last. They have this new cash pop game. We're not going to be giving those away, but I'll have scratch-offs to give away. Also, our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping my water crystal clear for my drinking and my sanity, as well as Jiffy Lube Multicare, which is keeping my car clear on these 95-degree days where I invite people like our chief digital officer, Mike Rosenfeld, down to Oriole Park for an ass beating of the New York Yankees. And he couldn't because he's like busy running web connection and being a chief digital officer to people like me and like my documentary and getting more traffic and this and that and building a business. And more than that, dude, it's been a minute for you and me because we get together about the launch of the new website, which is coming next week. Thank you, Jessica Vallis at Harford Designs. We have so many cool people that power us up on these wise conversations. But you went to that Woodstock thing in Detroit 2 weeks ago, right? Like you were the poppy seed in the bakery of the Greek town, downtown Detroit draftathon. How did that go, Mike Rosenfeld?
Well, imagine getting a ticket to Woodstock and arriving and not realizing that Woodstock was as grand as Woodstock was. That's exactly what happened. My son lives in Detroit for now for work. And I was like, hey, this is probably the only time I'd go to an NFL draft and let's do it. So
does he live downtown in what I would know as downtown in that little square where like the Greek town casino in near the stadiums?
His office is right there. Like when you saw all the aerial footage.
But he doesn't live in that because they were doing a very serious, you know, this with Gilbert, work, live, play, all the things we're trying to do in Baltimore that, you know, you've been out there witnessing. I'm wondering how it would be the difference between saying, yeah, people live like Chris Pica lives down by Digital Harbor in South Baltimore. But the difference would be, do people now live in the skyscrapers at Light and Pratt? Right.
Absolutely.
Like where I lived, and Detroit was missing that element after the sort of the burn down of the motor industry, which really was never in downtown Detroit anyway. Downtown Detroit had been long forgotten from the riots of 68 and all that. But I saw the aerial shots and all that. And I really wonder, because it's been a few years, I wonder what's there when it's when that's not going on, what that space looks like.
Well, I'm glad you asked the question because I know you often talk about sports, but there was definitely a vibe in Detroit. And just for a background, my wife is from the Detroit suburbs. And when I started going there in the 90s, the downtown was literally no one was there. I kind of used to say Baltimore City was 10 or 15 years ahead of where Detroit was, believe it or not, with all some of the issues that we have.
Well, in the 80s and 90s, we rebounded very quickly after all the, I mean, it's part of the documentary was like, I was born like in a really bad time in 68. And it didn't feel like a bad time in 81 and 82 and 84 when I'm working at the paper downtown and Harbor Place is coming and then Camden Yards. Like, but we, I mean, as a city, we lost a football team. We lost an NBA team here, right? Yeah. Like it took us 50 years to get the arena fixed so I can go see Janet Jackson. So, excuse me, Hard and Cheap Trick next week. Thank you, Curio Wellness. But like all of this, Detroit's had real problems with arenas where the Pistons fought with the Red Wings forever. And they built one in Auburn Hills and the Silver Dome was out in like Owings Mills, you know, in Pontiac. And so like their sports thing was they abandoned Detroit in the 70s and 80s and moved everything out of the city. Really?
Right. So basically my oldest son, who's now 30, just to put an age on it, went to college at University of Michigan. So I started going to Michigan much more often than I would have otherwise. And I set up an office there.
So you know the Detroit airport better than you know BWI. Like, you know Detroit. I've flown into Detroit 3 times in my life. I've been to Detroit 8 times in my life, you know, like literally, which is a lot for anybody to say you've been there a lot, but I don't feel like, I mean, I know we're Royal Oak. I've been to Grosse Pointe. I've been to weddings there. I've been to all the arenas. I party. That picture of me and Eddie Van Halen that you love, where he's got the cigarette and just kind of hanging out backstage, that's from underneath the palace at Auburn Hills. Don't tell anybody. It's when Gary Cherone was singing in the band. There weren't a lot of people there that night. That's why Eddie gave me special time. But like, I spent time in Detroit, but when I go in and out, I think of it as a place that is definitely in better shape than it was when I found it. I went to the Lindell AC. Are you familiar with the Lindell AC?
I'm not.
Google that. Lindell AC Athletic Club. Lindell AC wasn't an athletic club, it was a bar. But it was a very famous 60s, 70s bar where all the ball players hung out. It was sort of an after-hours place, from what I understand. It's where the Orioles celebrated the 69 pennant, I believe. Boog Powell, famously, pictures, all that. It's Billy Martin probably got in a fight there one night. Like, it's that kind of like legendary place. But I went there at the end of the end with my wife, and maybe 2002 or three, before the new stadium came online, and it was a war zone. I mean, it was like whatever people would say awful about Baltimore and the worst of the worst of the worst. I felt like I went to this place looking for like this treasure, and was like, oh my God, what happened here? And then they ripped Tiger Stadium down, and like, yeah, I mean, their city's been through it. So when you see it on display like this, it is a night for all of us to dream of New Harbor, fixing up the baseball stuff, you know, like we can have nice things, Mike, right?
Well, look, I'll put it in perspective. When I went there my first time in like 1990, my not yet father-in-law took me on a drive into Detroit. And people our age will remember the public service announcement with the Native American crying a tear because he's looking at people who litter. That's what my father-in-law was. He would say, "This used to be the Paris of the United States," and he was pointing to buildings that were boarded up with graffiti. There was no one on the streets. Imagine driving at 3 in the afternoon on Lombard Street and you being the only car there, like a ghost town. That's literally what Detroit was. So
See,
fast
that's what I
forward.
found. That when the Lindell AC, when I went in there to get a hot dog and a beer to sort of be in the space where Boog Powell and like, it was like, oh my, you know, and I hear you loud and clear on that.
So fast forward to 2013 when my son's at University of Michigan and I'm starting to go to Michigan on Detroit on a regular basis. I get an office space equivalent to like a WeWork to work at, and I start befriending people and I start seeing vibe and buzz and young people moving downtown and young people buying mansions for $20,000, but they putting money and fixing it up. And my son took an internship with a commercial developer one summer, so he stayed out there and he rehabbed a skyscraper that is now one of the most coveted. You asked, do people live down there? Yes, it's called the Albert, and it was empty, and it was one of the places that were boarded up, which is now a coveted place where young people live downtown. So fast forward to the draft. You asked
I
about
gotta
the
come to
draft.
Detroit. Let's go see the Tigers and the Orioles. Let's go. Come on.
Look, you talked to our mutual friend Bill Cole about our trips to Detroit, and I've taken him along for the ride. And literally within the last 2 weeks, the Wall Street Journal wrote an article about Detroit's comeback and it's on its way. But let's just talk about the draft because we're going to tie all these things together. Because I go there, not I have this vision of being underneath that big awning. You know, I'm going to go, we're going to go, and I'm going to be under this big awning, and my
That's only
son's.
for the first 5,000 people that are under the awning, right?
No,
Maybe not even that many.
you have to be invited to be under the awning. All the rest of us is just in the sea. It's like being in the infield of Preakness. You know, I didn't anticipate that, but it was
There's
all
no
good.
there. It's just you just stand. Like
Right.
literally,
Oh yeah.
it just poured into the streets. Were there vendors in the streets or
Yeah, so
no?
here's how it goes.
It's
Like I
Detroit. I feel
said,
like it's probably underground.
my son's office building is the tall building right next to that. He's got a park. He works there. He's got a parking pass. He's like, we're set. We're covered. I got parking. We're going to get in. We're going to get out. And we start arriving. Imagine going down 83 to the very end, where it dumps you into the city proper, and everything's closed, and all the police are there, and they're saying you can't go here and you can't go there. And he's, to his credit, being aggressive and trying these side streets to get to his coveted parking spot. Not happening. So we parked in another garage. We had to go all the way up to the top, and then basically it's caged in. The draft is caged in. So we went to some of the local establishments. We actually went to a bar called the Baltimore. And we didn't, we it just happened to be there, and there were a bunch of people there. I was wearing a vintage Ravens jacket that people were like, that jacket is the sickest jacket. It's a starter jacket. It's got, oops, I get all excited. I'm knocking microphones down. It's got
So
the,
is it the old Flying B?
yeah, it, no, it's got the elite, the trademark face of the Raven that they
Nice.
work, yeah, on it. So we grab a couple beers and then we go into the draft. And yes, to your point, there's spot-a-potties like
So did you pay to get in?
no, it's a it was a free thing
It's free.
on
Okay.
the
No,
NFL app.
I'm just trying to see if it was $10 across the line to go
Nope.
to get the $15 beers. The perimeter is what I,
Yes.
to use their terminology. 'Cause I've been to one NFL draft. I told Luke this 2 weeks ago. I was sitting next to John Ogden when he was drafted, the first ever draft pick. I was sitting with
Wow.
Ed Carroll. It was me and Vito Stellino, the only two reporters from Baltimore that were there. And I have the hat off of John Ogden's head. The
Wow.
hat that didn't have the logo, I own that hat. There was a box. There were only 10 of those hats made. Eddie Carroll had them. And but that's the only, it just didn't appeal to me. I mean, we threw lots of parties and we had parties at the barn and draft parties and we did all of that for years and years and years. We were onto the draft way before anybody else was onto the draft. But to see what it's become and for you to attend it, I have no doubt it would just be an incredibly spectacular thing for Baltimore.
Well, here's the bottom line. You walk through the metal detectors to a sea of madness. To the right is more spot-a-potties than I've ever seen grouped together. That was the only place you could go to the bathroom. To the left is all of the vendors, which the lines were ridiculous. So I'm glad we drank before we got in there. And then you walk in and you see the that you see the awning,
Shell, the
you see
shell.
that shell, but we were equivalent to being in the end zone upper deck, two rows from the top, is really where we were, except it was 275,000 people instead of 55,000 or 75,000 people. So we worked our way. When we went in, Big Sean, who my son is a fan of, was playing. He played like 10 songs, and we were digging that. And we started working our way to the side, to the side, to the side. And I was probably within a baseball throw of the edge of the shell, but I was to the side, couldn't see the stage. So bottom line is, we had to watch the
Did
draft
you
on the.
boo when everybody else booed Goodell? Did you just boo to do it?
So we had two things that we said: we have to stay for booing of Goodell, and I wanted to stay for the first five picks to see if there's any drama for trading up to get a quarterback. After the fifth pick in the first round, I'm like, let's roll. And we were back at his place for pick 11 through the end of the first round. But
Oh, so
here's
you
the
only
thing.
stay 2 hours. See, you weren't okay.
We
All
were
right,
there
you weren't
for three
hardy.
and a
You weren't
half
hardy.
hours.
You didn't do any moshing, no stage diving, none of that.
Not
And okay.
that those days for me are
I'm
over. But
Googling this Baltimore place now in Detroit and feel like I got to go there and get a beer.
yeah, it's just it's like a Baltimore type spot. It was like a little row like where Pickles is. But here's the
Was the
thing that
Baltimore guy own it?
I have no idea. Didn't
All right,
get that
I'm
far.
Googling it. Go ahead. You carry on. Mike Rosenfeld is
Here's.
our guest, Chief Digital Officer here, WNST Baltimore Positive, as well as Web Connection.
Yeah, I'm sorry you can't tell that I'm excited about my experience. But bottom line is, the 95% of the people were from Detroit. And they're finally proud of their Lions, as they should be. Imagine the feeling. Remember the feeling what we had when we finally, was it 2014, when we finally went back to the playoffs after, such a drought. And I Googled Wayne Fonts was the last coach of the Lions that I remember having a team that was relevant that had made the playoffs. I think it was in 1996. So their team was one win, just like we were away from the Super Bowl. So their people and their fans were fired up, and you could feel it. and they were proud of their city because their city was in the spotlight. There was tremendous pride of what was going on
Well, they haven't
in
played a whole
Detroit.
lot of January football games around there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in real terms, you know?
Exactly. And
When you
you
got
could
there in
feel.
the 90s, you must admit, if your wife's from there and all of that, hockey, 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 even on the backside of the Bad Boys, if you've been going there since the early 90s,
Yeah.
but it was hockey town, right? Like,
Yeah.
literally.
That's what they call it.
Yeah,
Hockey town.
hockey
Yeah.
town, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, but they've always had this passion for the football team. When Jim Schwartz was the coach of the team, I remember hanging out with him that summer. He got the job, and he told me that, like, when he met with the newspapers and the people there, they were all very succinct that the Lions were the most popular team there. Not just
Yeah.
because the NFL rules or whatever, but for clicks, for websites, for interest, for all of that, the Lions are the heart of Detroit. Even though they've never won. They're sort of like the Chicago Cubs before they won, or the Indians before they went. You know, just the lovable losers, Plimpton. I mean, when you think of irrelevant, I mean, never been to a Super Bowl. Like, but let that
Which,
settle in.
if you go beyond sports to the human experience of sports, you remember the guy, the picture of the video of the guy crying at the Lions game when they won their playoff game against the Rams,
Yeah, yeah,
and he had
yeah.
been there. I mean,
The older fella, yeah.
I felt that because I've experienced. Look,
Look,
Bill
I'll feel
Cole.
that if I get my press credential back after 18 years, believe me.
Well, Bill Cole and I have been taking some people over the last couple of years to Detroit. They're a much larger market. There's much more wealth. There's more billionaires there, but they are a blue-collar town, just like us. They're the brunt of jokes, just like us. I feel a affinity towards the people, and they're Midwest, so they got that charm and kindness about them. So I root for them. I did not want to play them in the Super Bowl, however, because that would have been World War III between me and my family forever. Whoever lost that would have had bragging rights forever.
I think they
But
should just put the old Eric Hipple jerseys on. I don't like that they wear their pajamas, you know. Like
yeah.
I love the Honolulu blue. It's a great look. Go
Yeah.
back to the Plimpton Lions, you know. Look the way you're supposed to look. Look the way, you know, Barry Sanders looked. You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah. And I've gone to plenty of Thanksgiving games, which, we could debate whether they're entitled to have a lock on the Thanksgiving games, but that's a big deal. And that's always fun when I'm there for Thanksgiving. But bottom line, it was a great experience. Yes, we were there for a short amount of time, but it was more than enough to soak it in and to get the vibe of what was going on. I love the booing of Goodell. I loved Eminem coming out. I mean, people were just fired up as they should have been.
Yeah, only thing missing was Madonna. Was Bob Seger there? I hope he was, you know.
Yep. Oh, yeah, he came out.
I'm asking. I mean, it was
Oh
Detroit.
yeah,
I
oh,
forget.
I didn't know if it was, when you're there, you don't know what's on the commercial break and
I
what
was
you're.
watching the Orioles at different points too. So like,
Oh yeah, Bob Seger was there. It may have been during the commercial. The
okay.
worst was the two, the man and the woman from maybe the NFL Network that were riffing during the commercials just to kill time. And the band, it's just like, oh, the pick is in. Just tell us who the pick is. It's just when
Pick
you're
is
there,
in.
it's brutal. I'd
The
much
whole
rather sit.
you're there for the pick is in. And
Yeah,
at
I'd
home
much
it
rather
feels
sit.
like something over cheese dip that you do. It wasn't cold though, was it, in Detroit?
It was low 50s.
All right. I mean,
Yeah,
that's still kind of like,
I was
by the way,
comfortable.
I've looked this place up. Baltimore Bar and Grill on Randolph Street. It
Yeah.
almost sounds like a fake address. You ready? It's 1234. Where do
Oh,
you
really?
live? Officer says to me, where do you live? I live at 1234 Randolph Street. Sure you
Okay.
do. Sure
Yeah,
you
that's
do.
right.
Right.
Come on.
1234 Randolph Street, Detroit, Michigan. It is a Baltimore bar and grill. It says comfy hangout with low-key tavern vibe, serving basic pub food plus pool, bar games, and a jukebox. That sounds
Yeah,
like Baltimore, right?
it was a dive. It was awesome. And there
It
were people
first thing
out.
it says is dive bar. That's what it's listed as, dive bar.
And they make it's unapologetic, and it's in a row. So there was a bar next to it, and a bar next to it, and a bar next to it. But that just and we
Listen,
didn't go
listen.
there.
No, number one review here, grilled cheese out of this world. Oh, baby.
Oh, that's right. And we didn't seek it
All
out. It just fortuitous was the one we landed at,
right.
and actually, my son and I took a picture in front of it. which is awesome.
It's going to be the first place I go when I come to Detroit. Mike Rosenfeld is here. He attended the NFL draft. He is our chief digital officer of all things Baltimore Positive, and he can be your chief digital officer. Tell me what a fractional the chief. Tell me what you do, because what you do around here is we're launching a new website next week, trying to keep us sort of in the lanes between you and Chris Pica and Jessica Vallis at Harford Designs. I have. Dare I say, I have a team. It's almost like a sports franchise.
Yeah, well, as you should. I mean, you're not playing games, and you want to win digitally. But what we do is we work large companies who are serious about their digital presence, their website, their apps, their social media presence. They hire chief digital officers. They're full-time executives. But small to middle-sized businesses aren't able to compete. So what we do at Web Connection, we provide a executive level chief digital officer service on a fractional basis to small to mid-sized companies who really want to win online and can't afford a full-time chief digital officer. So we have a model that's affordable for almost any small to mid-sized business, including just startups, to help them win.
Even little AM radio stations and with visionaries and entrepreneurs and sort of the moxie and the passion that I've shown here over 40 years. So when did you find what me and what I do? I remember meeting you 20 years ago at networking things. Like, feels like 20 years ago. I feel like I met you in the aughts somewhere when I went into WNST.net 2000. 5, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there when I found the late Matt Goddard. We just lost Matt recently. He was one of the guys on the original team, maybe in 07, 08, where I was looking, quite frankly, for a guy like you then. You were building websites. So I know I've known you since then. I don't know that you listened to the radio show or any of that stuff. So this documentary, where you've been with me for a long time as my chief digital officer, what have you learned from this thing? Because everybody's come up to me and said something like, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I didn't know you did that. And everybody except Joe Enoch. Joe Enoch, I saw him at the Accelerant event at the Maryland Zoo, and he said, I knew every bit of it. And I'm like, all right, man, you're at my mother's funeral, dude. So like, yeah, I guess you did know every, you know, like there's certain people that are on the inside of the inside, but there's very few people that, and I met Enoch at Gator's Pub in 1993. He would come up to me as a fan of mine and ask me trivia questions about baseball to see how much I knew while I DJ trying to chase girls off Loyola and NDP, or not NDP, and Notre Dame, the college, Towson. Right. Yeah, that too. Dude, I don't know what you know, what you don't know, but I'm guessing you found out some things, maybe. John Denver, starting with that.
Yeah, well, look, I don't think it's a secret for people who listen to you that a lot of people love you and a lot of people love to hate you. What your film does is it allows people to understand you a bit more. And that's one thing that you asked how long. I mean, Baltimore's a small city. Those people who are hustling, and I mean that in a good way, trying to work and trying to grow their businesses, get out and about. And when you get out and about, you meet people. And you either know people directly or you know someone who knows them. So, yeah, it was probably, I started my company in 1995, moved down to Canton in 1997, was across the hall from Matt Goddard and Dave Taub, who at the time their company was called Impreza.
Did you have a storefront on the square in Canton in an office off the square with a
yes.
front door? I was in that. When were you there? Because I promise you I remember visiting you there. When was that?
So I had two places in Canton. The first place in 1997 was above what was the Highs, which is now Dangerously Delicious Pies. We were right above there.
I feel you on the other side of the square, on the Clotta side,
yep.
Where Helen's Garden was near between Clotta and Looney's.
You're close.
Across the street from Nacho Mama's. Like, if I was at Nacho Mama's, where Elvis's eye was looking at your office somehow. Is that true?
So then I bought the building across the street that was between Speakeasy
okay.
and the TV guy on the other corner. So
you were, but you were more where the firehouse on that side.
yes, I was looking out my window,
And
I saw the
Linwood,
fire.
Kenwood, Linwood, Linwood,
Yeah, Linwood
Linwood.
and O'Donnell, right at
I've
that
only been to
intersection.
Baltimore my whole life. The documentary would tell you that. I know where most of the. So
So that
what year
was
was that?
my that was 90
Really?
2000 that was 2002 till I just sold the building during the Roni.
Okay, so when I met you, that's where you were. So it had to have been
Yes.
sometime in the aughts.
We
I
that's
said.
when we formally met, but our
But I'd
paths
have
have
been on
been
the radio
crossing forever.
13, 14 years by then, right? I mean, like, I'd been in the paper before that and like whatever. There was a lot of ways to sort of engage in some way, but you were like in a nerdier computery. I was very intimidated by computers at that point, and I sort of hated the internet in the beginning because it was a place where people did really awful things with no accountability, like on those Sun message boards. The Sun message boards were sort of the first unpoliced toilet of being a B-list celebrity in Baltimore.
Well, I remember when we met, you had gone through what was that period of time's iteration of your movie. It was a polished presentation of who you were, and I remember it wasn't you didn't come to me looking for advice or counsel. You took that opportunity to explain who you were, which I appreciated, and it was more PowerPoint based. The video is more of a documentary. It's more a story of how you came about, and all the people you've touched. And I will tell you this, because this is what I wanted to talk about today, but the Detroit thing was definitely better. I am not a guy who has a bunch of idols, sports idols, music idols. I only had one, and I'm envious of you because you met him twice. You mentioned him once today, which was Eddie Van Halen. And just last night, my wife agreed to sit with me. There's a documentary on Paramount Plus for of Wolfgang Van Halen, but really it's about his growing up and the challenges of being the son of Eddie and the struggles. And it's another
He's also the
documentary.
son of Valerie Bertinelli, too, by the way. So, you know.
Absolutely. And she's very present in the documentary, but just the struggles that he had and as much as I knew him, I went to every tour every year from 1984. I wish I would have l learned to love them a couple years earlier, but that's when it started. But every tour, multiple, just like never met him, idol from afar. But the documentary was very sad. Very sad,
He was so nice to me every time I ever met him. And I met him three times. I'm tr just trying to play this through in my mind.
don't rub it in.
The first time I met him was at the Spectrum on the 5150 tour, because I had interviewed Alex. Alex called my house. I was living with my parents. So this is 86. I'm 17 years old. Yeah, I was 17. It was August of 86. And I'll never forget, he called early. Right. She called early. My mother, like, she pissed me off. She picked the phone up. I'm like, don't answer the phone. Geddy Lee's calling. Don't answer the phone, Mom. I don't want it to sound like I live with my mother. Don't screw this up for me. It's not like girls. It's Eddie Van Halen or Alex Van Halen. So Alex Van Halen called. I grabbed the phone. I did the interview. And in those days, on the back of the phone, we put a little coupler that had an earpiece that connected to, so I could hear so I could tape the interview, right? So I taped the, this is before, this is 86, dude. This is before I even had like a Radio Shack recorder to give me little mini tapes. So this is the way I was recording in the early part of my, and I lost those tapes, dude. Don't get me started, but I had the tape, right? Of all of it. And Alex, I mean, we're talking 1986 here. 5150 within days of that very famous concert that was taped at the Dunkin' Donuts Center up in Providence. It was within that week period of time. They so everything you saw, it's what they look like, it's what they felt like. People were throwing the bras up on stage, the Dave Suck signs, Dave Who. Every night, Sammy's unfurling these blankets of bile for David Lee Roth, right? And they're killing it because the songs, I mean, 5150 still. It's not the greatest album. I mean, all you David Lee Roth people have at it, but like 5150 by far, earth-shattering album for me still to this day. It's my party album. Summer Nights. Why can't all 5150, the song is probably my favorite Van Halen song. But he called, I did the interview, and they were playing at the Capitol Center, like down the line, and they were playing at the Spectrum that night. And like in our conversation, he said, "Are you coming to the show?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm coming next week." He's like, "Well, you're in Baltimore. We're in Philly tonight. Do you want to come up tonight?" Alex says this to me. I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "I'll leave you tickets. Come up. They'll be waiting for you." And I said, "Well, I got to jump in the shower then if we're gonna." It was like 2 in the afternoon. He did the interview with me. You know what I mean? Because he's a rock star. He's not awake at 10 in the morning, right? So 2:30, I'm like, let's go." You know? So I jump in the shower, and the craziest thing is, he called back, and my mother answers the phone. Now I'm at my mom's house, and my mother's, you know, you met my mom. My mother was my mother, but this is my mother when she's 65, 7 years old in Dundalk. "Hello? Who? Alex? What? What?" You know, like, so now I'm in the shower. Right. You're embarrassed. You're banging your head. You're like, your face is red for me, right? Like, so I'm in the shower. My mother, "Hey, Alex is on the phone for you. Mom, hang on. Let me put some clothes in." I run. "Hey, I'm soaking wet. Hi. Hey, dude, get your ass up here. I just left you tickets. Thanks." He couldn't send me an email. It was 1986. He couldn't text me. He was reconfirming that it was okay for me to drive 100 miles and come. He didn't know I was 17. He didn't know. He didn't know. So I get up there. I got backstage passes, the whole deal. It's 5:30, 6 o'clock. I get my tickets, which it wasn't all that unusual. I had been a music critic for 2 years. So let's not, you know. I had already hung out backstage with Aerosmith and Geddy Lee and I'd Kiss and like on and on and on and on. So this was just another band, but it's still Van Halen, not a small thing. But nonetheless, I'm not starstruck. I had been underneath the spectrum as a hockey reporter at that point, so I was not intimidated by any of that. But I got there and it was a party. I mean, Heineken's everywhere. I'll never forget that. Everybody was hammered and it was 6 o'clock. And then they went on and played. Right. So I get there. He, Alex, "Hey, you're not, hey man, come on out." Giving me beer. Like here. They autographed all my stuff. I didn't have anything. I didn't have a camera. Well, I mean, you couldn't take a camera in. It was 1986. So I just had the autographs on the blue backstage passes that are the 5150 tour. So that's the first time. The second time was at Merriweather, where you see the pictures of me with the whole band. That was in the backstage trailer with Mike Messina. And Eddie was really like famous for being stoned at this point in his life. He was very mellow and he didn't know anything about baseball. Nothing. Did not know who Mike Messina was. Now, Michael Anthony, baseball fan. Michael Anthony, that's Mike Messina. He just pitched in the All-Star game. So, and Mike was hurt. It was after the Hasselman fight, if you go back and Google it. So, Mike, and did I tell you got a ticket for a Rolling Red that night with Messina in the back seat? Oh, Jesus. Howard County Court, 1994. You can look it up. So that night, it really was about Messina was into Eddie. Messina was starstruck by Eddie, right? And Mark will point this out, and we have pictures of all of this because we had cameras and like all that stuff. Messina had a baseball that he wanted Eddie to sign, and Eddie like was holding the baseball with Mike, and he's like, "Man, how do you throw that thing? How do you throw this 100 miles an hour?" Like he was all mellow, stoner Eddie, and he's with Mike, and Mike's like, and Mike's just Mike at this point. It's 1994. You know, Mike hadn't had a contract. You know, Mike's an all-star, but we're all 25 years old. You know what I mean? We're starstruck, right? And Mike's like, "Dude, how do you play the guitar like that?" You know, like it became, so they exchanged numbers and Mike was supposed to go golfing with Eddie in LA when he went in with the Angels. And Mark will tell you this story. Eddie called the hotel looking for Mike. And Mike wasn't there to play golf. This isn't an era where you didn't have cell phone, like barely cell phones, right? Like he had people and this and that and whatever. And Mike did not get to play golf with Eddie Van Halen as I know it, but Eddie called. And Mike told me this. When, I mean, this is 1990. He's like, you'll never believe what happened. I was out to lunch with Poole or whatever. We went to Disneyland or whatever the hell we did that day. And I got back to the hotel at the Anaheim Marriott, and there was a message from Eddie Van Halen. And he's like, do you want to golf? He's like, I'm pitching tomorrow. I can't golf. So I don't know that they ever golfed. But like, so I'm giving you these stories because I know you want them. And the other one was the other time was because of my dear, dear friend, Jason Wright, who is a vice president of Live Nation in Chicago these days and was running the Palace at Auburn Hills, as well as the Fox Theater in Detroit for Niederlander before it became Live Nation and like all of that. He worked in Detroit at this time. Whenever the Gary Cherone era was, so you tell me when that was, 96, 7, in that
95.
range,
95.
it is featured in the documentary in the Nasty newsletter section where you see nasty parties in Detroit. And there's a picture of me and Jim Edmonds in Tiger Stadium. And there's individual pictures of me with Michael Anthony, Gary Cherone, Alex, Eddie, all four of them individually. I did not get a group picture. I was kind of hanging in the hallway, and it wasn't like I wasn't supposed to be there, but I was literally just Jason's buddy guest. I wasn't music critiquing. I wasn't on any junket. I was literally there for sound check. I mean, I was there at like 3:30 in the afternoon because it was Jason's event. He was the promoter, and I was just like, stay out of the way. I said, I know Alex a little bit, and there was no, and I knew their manager, Bob Leffler, not Bob Leff, Ed Leffler. I knew him. So, I mean, I had some warm introductions and I took pictures and just, it was, hey, hi. And obviously that was a rough time for the band. They had sold, I mean, my guy was the promoter. He's like, dude, we sold 3,500 tickets. We're playing a 21,000 seat basketball. Like it was, upper deck was closed. You know, it was really, it was bad, the Gary Cherone era. But so, but every time I met them, they were just the greatest guys ever. Like it was a party. It was all that you, it was all the almost famous Cameron Crowe stuff you'd want me to tell you. You know what I mean? It was like,
oh my God, I'm so envious of you. What I'd have to pay to play 18 rounds of golf with Eddie Van Halen.
I don't know that Messina ever did, but if I ever get Mike on the show, and he's like, Mike doesn't do anything. He doesn't like, if he ever comes on, I hope he does, to promote something good, we could do that. Mike Rosenfeld is our chief digital officer. He is Web Connection. He loves Van Halen. So I bored you. I hope I bored you with those stories.
I loved it. Thank you.
See you. I went to Detroit once. I partied. Back for more. We're Baltimore Positive.